But what's the first example of a cult in history, the most ancient cult we have on record? Interesting question, no? So we read about the idea of the Migdal Bavel, and this is probably one of the most cryptic nine psukim we have in all of Chumash. The Medrash Rabbah says that Maisa Dor HaMabul, what took place with the time of the flood, although there's a lot there that's very hard to understand, but Nisparish, at least there's some framework we have as to like how to understand what happened and why it happened. Maisa Dor HaFlaga Lo Nisparish, but what actually took place with the Dor HaFlaga, the generation of the Flaga, that's not explained. It's very, very elusive. The Ramban writes in the beginning of Chumash that the entire story of Bereishis in Parshas Bereishis sod omuk eino muvan min hamikros. Right? It's a deep secret that's not understood just by reading the psukim at face value. And that's true not only for the creation of the world, but says the Ramban, that's also true b'yitziras Adam v'chava, v'chetam v'onsham, the creation of Adam v'chava, what their hate was, what their punishment was, the whole story of Gan Eden, being expelled from the garden. Ki kol zeh lo yuvan bina shleima min ha'ksuvim. All of these stories in Parashas Bereishis cannot be understood in its shleimus from the psukim themselves. And then he says, v'kol shekein sipur dor ha'mabul v'haflaga. Kol shekein. Meaning even more just like esoteric than Maisa Bereishis, than the story of the creation of the universe, is the Dor HaMabul V'Haflaga. So obviously we see from Chazal and we see from the Ramban that reading these nine psukim talking about a group of people after the flood creating or trying to create for themselves this massive tower was something that is beyond comprehension.
So this week's parsha is really where we start to understand a little bit.
Right, exactly. Lech Lecha is the beginning of the Chumash in the sense where we have more of an ability to actually read it with some level of comprehension. Now, if you look at these nine psukim, we're going to look at them together in a moment, as to what took place, the Dor HaFlaga, it sounds like they were trying to build a city where everyone could gather together and then make a big tower in the center. Not a big deal. Now, there are Gemaras, there are other sources of Chazal that speak about what their real intent was, but just viewing it, pshuto shel mikra, doesn't seem like they were doing anything that bad. If you look at the Ibn Ezra, he says, the simple understanding of these psukim is, you had a group of people, v'sov taitam livnos ir gedola lemoshavam, they wanted to build a massive city to dwell there, Belivnos migdal gavoa lius lehem leos l'shem. They wanted to build a big skyscraper that it should be, you know, for their glory. Uledas makom meir leholchim chutza kuroi mikna, and for others to know where that main city was, almost like the shepherd for its flock. And that's why they were punished so severely. Right? Doesn't sound that bad. And that's really the question the Ran has on the Ibn Ezra. The Ran says, you have some of the Pirushim on Chumash, referring to the Ibn Ezra, who seem to explain it at face value. But the truth is, all Mefarshim, they're ba'afela. They're all kind of groping in the dark, trying to make heads and tails of this story of Migdal Bavel. Something that Chazal tell us is lo nisparish. It's not really explainable. And you have some, here he's referring to the Ibn Ezra, they explain it according to its simple understanding, that they wanted to build this gathering place. Uma chetosom, im rotzu lios kish echad chaverim. What was their sin? If they wanted to build a place they could all live together in unity? It sounds like John Lennon. What's bad about that? Imagine all the world, right? No barriers, no factions, no religion. What a beautiful place it would be. Halo hayaroi lius lehem bezes char tov. If anything, they shouldn't be punished. They should be rewarded with incredible schar. Because we have an idea, and this is a very profound concept, afilu ovdei avodah zarah. Even if you have a group of people, some pagan tribe somewhere in Uganda, kolzman shehashalom beinehem, as long as they're living with real peace between themselves, and between themselves, l'chora also means, and they're not bent on killing others, right? But there's real shalom. Ein midas hadin p'sucha kenegdom. We assume that Hashem has rachmanis on these people. Because unfortunately, yes, you're into your idolatry and you're living in this whole warped reality, but the fact that you're treating each other with shalom and chesed and hatava, Hashem has rachmanis, because you're doing something good. So according to the Ibn Ezra, says the Ran, what was this group of people doing wrong to be punished as they were? Yes. So that's a great question. If Chazal are telling us, lo nisparsha, that this whole story is not understandable, why would the Rishonim waste their time trying to make it understandable? Right? It's a good question. I assume the answer is, lo nisparsha means that don't think you're going to get to the depth of what was actually happening. Who were these people? What were they doing? What their motivation was? There's so much going on within those nine psukim. You're never going to get to the bottom of it. However, the Rishonim still have their mandate of explaining. You know, there are different layers, different levels of understanding. So the Ibn Ezra is saying the Pashut Pshat. The Ran is questioning, how is that even a valid Pashut Pshat? If they just wanted to have a place, a kibbutz, to live together, why would they be punished? So let's read through some of these psukim together. And I think we have here really the first time in history there was at least the idea of creating a cult. And it was the whole land spoke the same language, with a unified speech. So we're going to interpret these nine psukim based on the commentary of the Netziv and the Emek Davar. The Netziv here has a profound explanation of what actually took place that I think can help us understand maybe what the Ibn Ezra was saying. Safa achas, ze gorem lechet rishon. There were two mistakes that were made by the people of this time. The fact they spoke safa achas, the same language, that was the first mistake. Hainu, sheyaskimu leshevis kulan bekibbutz echad. They had in mind to all live in the same area, and this itself was against the instructions of the Borei Olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said after the Mabul, you should spread out throughout the globe and you should try to recreate life. And they wanted to stay together. However, he says, obviously that's not a big deal. It might be a mistake. You can't call that a terrible sin. Udvarim Mechadim, but besides having the same language, they also had a unified speech. So what was that unified speech? What was the mantra of the Dor HaFlaga? So the Pasuk doesn't tell us. It just says, Devar Mechadim. They had the same thing. So says the Netziv, Lo Pirshan HaKosuv Ki'im Shayu Devar Mechadim. It only tells us they were all saying the same thing to teach us we don't care what they were saying. We don't care what their mantra was, what their philosophy was, what their religion was. What got Hashem's attention, so to speak, is the fact that they were all saying the exact same thing. Ki'im bishvil shayu achadim. It was because it was devar machadim, yiyu mashiyu, whatever it was. V'davar zeh, im ki lefi hanira, ein bezeh shum avon. Now, if they're all saying the exact same thing, that doesn't seem to be an avon. What's the sin in kind of following the same ideals? Adarabba, chibur etzavim. If anything, ask the Netziv, that should be a connection amongst humanity. Avokan garim lachshav davar sheyotza l'takolas hayishuv. However, somehow the Torah is hinting by the fact that these people were speaking sofa echas, so the varim chadim, that was the beginning of the end. So he goes on to explain, if you jump down to Pasuk Dalet, that v'yomru hova nivna lanu iru migdol v'rosho b'shemayim. So they said, let us build a city, and we're going to build a tower that goes all the way up to the heavens. V'nasa lanu shem, and we'll make for ourselves a name, pen nofutz al penei chol ha'aretz. And their concern was we might be spread throughout the entire land. So explains the Netziv. Rosho b'shemayim, it doesn't mean obviously they were trying to go into outer space. They meant they wanted to build a massive skyscraper. Ela kesvurim shoyu kol ha'orim smuchos v'tefelos la'osu ha'yir. What they wanted to indicate is that all of the other cities that were close to this main, the capital city, they would be able to look up and view that as our central place of hadracha, and the people within the central city would be able to look out from that watchtower and keep an eye on the rest of the world as it's moving out and as it's developing. V'nasa lanu shem, that this migdal should be a name for us, mashgichim, anashim mashgichim u'mamonim al hadavar, meaning to say that they had people who were appointed as the mashgichim. They were watching over others. V'yiyu sarei tzava lahanish esa over, people who were given the task of punishing those who would try to break out of the sofa echas u'davar mechadim. Anyone who was thinking along a different lines or exploring or questioning, the point of this migdal was to have mashkichim watching and making sure that nobody would deviate. And here's the concern that's expressed, right? Pen nofutz al penei kol ha'aretz, because then people might go all throughout the world. Why do you care if people travel the world and make cities and countries elsewhere? Ma choshishu im yotzu kama l'eretz acheres. Why are you concerned by that? Why are you threatened? So explains the Netziv, Muvan shezeh ha'yishayich ledevar machodim shayu b'nehim, because that would risk the devar machodim, that singular view that they had amongst themselves. Ubasher ein deos b'nei odim shavim, because they knew that people are somewhat unique and everyone's going to think along their own machshava. Chashashu shelo yotzu b'nei odim midei yazu. Their main concern was not a geographical spreading throughout the globe. Their main threat was they might leave this philosophy, b'machshava acheres, and they might create a different ideal, or they might get involved with another way of viewing things. That's why they needed this migdal to have the mashgichim, to make sure that nobody would leave, not from the place, but from the deya, from the way of viewing life. And anyone who would step out of those devar mechadim, mishpato lesreifa, they'd be burned to death. Shechlitu larog es mi shelo yachshav kedaitam. It was very clear. We're all there for each other, right? We all create a city where you could take free transportation, and we're going to freeze the rent. And if you're making more money than he is, we're going to make sure that you give some of that to him. And we're all one, right? One for all and all for one. Just with one small caveat. If you leave, we'll kill you. Right? Okay, that's a good question. Let's read two more lines here from the Netziv. This is in Pasuk Vav. So what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu say? V'yomer Hashem. First of all, in Pasuk Hey, it's interesting. It has a lashon of V'yirid Hashem liros es ha'ir. That Hashem descended to see the city. According to some, v'yerid, obviously there's no such concept of a Kadosh Baruch Hu having an aliyah or a yerida, but v'yerid might have the connotation of looking at this at face value doesn't seem evil. V'yerid, you have to look a little bit beneath the surface to see the dangers involved with this kind of gathering. Then Pasuk Vav, V'yomer Hashem, Hein Am Echad. Hey, this is one nation. V'sofa Achas L'chulam, and they all speak the same language. V'zeh Chilam Lasos. This is the beginning of their ability to actually do something. And if we don't stop them now, so then they're not going to be able to turn back. Then it's going to be too late. Explains the Netziv. What does it mean that this is the beginning of their accomplishment? Ata eino ela hascholas davar havera. Now they're beginning this path towards avera, towards really harming themselves and others, because they're trying to have this feeling of we're all here, and even those who are going out geographically, we want to make sure you're not going out philosophically. If we allow this to continue, this will only lead to the tzimtzum hadas, to a whole narrowing of the mind, and ultimately it will lead to death and bloodshed. That's why Kadosh Baruch Hu v'yofetz Hashem osam misham al penei chol ha'aretz v'yachdelu livnos ha'ir. Not because there was a concern of, oh no, they might all stay right here geographically, but we're starting a new world. We need to have this as healthy and vibrant and robust as possible. And the goal was to have different languages and different philosophies and different types of cultures, a diversity of humanity. Now, what's the point of having a diversity if you'll have billions of people in all different strands of belief that are going to be off base? That's a great question. But Rav Kook has told us, and this is what the Rambam was saying, there's a nitzutz, a lokai in everything. There's a godly spark in all of this. It all has a chelik. It has a part of the global mission. This was the most ancient first documentation of a cult in history, according to the Netziv. So before questions, is this not a beautiful Netziv, right? And this might be, Efshe Kemen Zogin, this might be what the Ibn Ezra meant. Ibn Ezra was very terse. He just said, they're building this place, they all want to live together. So the Ran was asking, so what's the big deal? That's beautiful. Vayerid Hashem, but if you look a little bit deeper, if the Netziv is correct, so this might have been what the Ibn Ezra had in mind. Question, doctor. Okay, that's a deep point as well. In nature, we find that diversity is helpful. Yeah.
But then we said
the concept of groupthink as well in psychology, where it's never, not usually a good thing when everyone thinks the same thing.
Oh. However, if we're living in a group of people where questioning becomes something that is not allowed and not encouraged, right? That's a very dangerous place to be. Now, it doesn't mean you're a cult. And listen, unfortunately, we have many modern-day cults. Harvard, Columbia, MIT, there are many modern-day cults as well, right? One could even argue extreme atheism might be more of a cult than religion. One could make that argument. Depends. There are definitely many popular outspoken atheists. What's interesting though is that you'll never meet an outspoken, right, aggressive atheist who's not extremely arrogant. Why is that the case? So the Stipler writes that for a person to be so confident that there's nothing beyond what I can see and feel, that only comes from a deep-rooted sense of gaiva. It doesn't mean you're not going to find religious people who are also extremely arrogant. It's not in contrast to that. But the idea of being so convinced that there's nothing beyond what I could see and feel, that comes from a place of real deep gaiva. Question?
It seems like there's parallels between what the people are doing and saying a little bit that they wanted one language or a woman who has spoken and they want their one hand to be able to say Kadosh. We have their there are people that look over the machine, and we have our Sanhedrin and people who don't pay me, they also die. Like our goals, our ultimate goals of having Shiach seen to be parallel to life.
So it's a good question. I think the main difference, though, and I think this is a very significant difference, is that within any belief system, if I feel this is true, so then, of course, I want to make sure to pass this down to my children. Meaning, I once had a conversation with someone. They were explaining, you know, they themselves were traditional but not religious. They were explaining the reason why they'd rather send their children to a regular public school, assuming it was a decent education, in contrast to a yeshiva, is because I don't want to brainwash them. I want to give them the opportunity to think for themselves. Now, what's flawed with that logic? You're brainwashing either way, right? Whatever society, whatever culture you place yourself in or your child in, they're going to be influenced by that reality. So much of life is choosing the reality that I feel is the closest thing to truth. And then once I find that, trying to do everything I can to share that with my child. And if I make the decision that I don't want to educate you in my worldview that I think is the closest thing I have to the emes, so I'm doing a disservice to my child. So there is a concept that you could be in a mainstream religion where there's a real focus on education and making sure that people understand and appreciate what it is we believe. And there could be systems in place for making sure that happens. That doesn't make it a cult.
Why don't we just say that they're wrong? Because of this whole oneness and unified nation and focus, because that is what Jesus is trying to do. We also
honor. I'm saying, but that's true for every movement, if it's religious or not, if you believe in something, your goal is to share that belief with others. Now, it's how you share that belief. If I believe in subjective morality, which basically means there's no such thing as truth, right? And this is what I've always had a hard time with when you find people who are atheists and they're trying to convince you that your religion is silly. Why do you care that what I'm doing is silly? There's no purpose to anything, right? If I believe there's no intelligent design, there's no meaning in life, my existence has no more cheshivos than the existence of the ant that I just killed, so why are you convincing me that I'm wrong? Nothing matters. I think the answer to that is Rav Kook. The answer to that is because there's a spark of godliness even within that devout, arrogant atheist that's pushing him towards purpose. The way that it's channeled is, I want to convince you there is no purpose, but that is my purpose, right? But any belief system is, I want to share that with others. That doesn't make it unhealthy or cult-like.